Welcome to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answer your questions. I am your host, Dr. Ronit Lev, an emergency and addiction doctor who has served at the White House and still practices on the front lines. Right here on High Truths, you will learn from experts, hear stories from the emergency department, and listen to people who have struggled from addiction. Friends, fentanyl is plaguing America. It has infected all illicit drugs, from cocaine to meth, counterfeit pills, and even marijuana. If you're around someone who may be using drugs, you should carry naloxone, the opioid reversal agent. Carrying naloxone for drugs is like carrying an EpiPen for allergies. If you need a prescription for naloxone, you should have one, no questions asked. That is why I am offering a free prescription to anyone who needs one. Come visit me on hightruths.com to learn more about the show, submit a question, or download a free prescription for naloxone. And if you like the show, do me a favor. Give us a 5-star review and subscribe. Your stars are very much appreciated and go a long way in supporting the program. Today's episode is sponsored by Families Against Fentanyl. FAF is an organization set on breaking the status quo of failed solutions and to get to the core of the supply chain of deadly fentanyl. Learn more about FAF by visiting familiesagainstfentanyl.org and sign their petition to declare illegal fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. Hello again, High Truth listeners. Get ready for a mapping conversation. I'm your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. Mapping. Let me take you back to December 2019, a time you probably want to forget. 2019 is the year named after the COVID-19 pandemic. And many people like me were glued to the Johns Hopkins coronavirus world map, watching red dots grow bigger and bigger in regions across the globe. We saw a big red dot in Italy and growing dots across the United States. And as an emergency physician working the front lines, the data helped me prepare mentally and clinically for what to expect in the hospital. I stopped following the COVID map, but I did check it for this podcast, and there have been 6.8 million deaths worldwide from coronavirus in this pandemic, 1.1 million in the United States. As an emergency physician, I cannot help but add that today I would rather have COVID, a relatively mild disease, than influenza, the flu, a virus that knocks you out. But this is not a podcast about COVID. Back to mapping. Mapping of disease is not new. Our public health department reported sexually transmitted infection mapping on a regular basis. I get reports that let me know that the 92103 zip code has a high rate of gonorrhea and syphilis. In 2013, I became jealous of gonorrhea and chlamydia. These diseases were getting mapping. Why weren't we getting mapping for overdoses? I searched and found that the CDC had an application, and I created the first map for prescription overdose deaths for the state of California and shared it with our public health department to plea for resources for overdoses as we have for infectious diseases. I learned about ODMAP, another mapping application for drug overdoses. We do a really good job mapping, tracking, treating, and containing infectious diseases. I wish we had the same resolve to do the same thing for overdoses. And with that, let's hear our question of the day.
Hello, Dr. Lev. Thank you for bringing us High Truths. My name is Alex De Armas. I worked in law enforcement, mostly drug enforcement, for over 30 years at both the local and federal levels. I now work in a federal program that brings the Office of National Drug Control Policy's HIDA program and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, together as a joint collaborative initiative known as the ORS. Basically, we bring federal support to local efforts to decrease drug overdoses here in our region. That's San Diego County and Imperial County. One of our priorities has been, and continues to be, implementation of the Overdose Mapping Application Program, or ODMAP, throughout both counties to provide a data-driven focus to regional overdose response and the treatment and prevention efforts. According to recent estimates, in San Diego County alone, people die from fentanyl overdose at an alarming, tragic rate of 2.5 fatalities per day. We know ODMAP is a critical tool in tracking this epidemic in near real time. We know ODMAP technology has been used effectively throughout the United States to drive life-saving strategies, and we're finally starting to see some progress toward true statewide implementation in California. My question is this, Dr. Lev. Do you think, as the need for communication about overdose trends across jurisdictions and regions continues to increase, that we'll ever see national implementation of the ODMAP platform? And also closer to home, what are your feelings on California's implementation efforts so far?
Thank you, Alex, for amazing dedication to HIDA, high-intensity drug trafficking areas, and work that you do with law enforcement and collaboration with public health. You have been a powerhouse in getting ODMAP implemented in your area. To answer your question, let's go straight to Baltimore and the HIDA office that created ODMAP with Ali Burnell. Ali is the ODMAP program manager at the Washington-Baltimore high-intensity drug trafficking area, HIDA. And Ali has worked in overdose prevention and veteran suicide prevention program implementation through her work through the CDC Foundation Opioid Response Strategy, the ORS. To learn more about Ali Burnell and ODMAPs, please check out the High Truth show notes. Ali Burnell, welcome to High Truths.
Hi, thank you so much, Dr. Love, for having me on today.
We've talked before, you bring a lot of energy to the HIDA program of ODMAPs, and we've talked before about like implementation in California, and I thought, you know what, we need to share this information with our nation. So tell us about yourself and your background and what brought you to HIDA and what you're doing for HIDA. And maybe what is HIDA?
Yeah, I can start with HIDA. So because it's going to be brought up a lot. So HIDA is the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Program. It is a program underneath the Office of National Drug Control Policy. There are 33 HIDAs across the country that partner with law enforcement and now especially in with public health agencies to dismantle and disrupt drug trafficking organizations, provide additional resources to different agencies, fund different initiatives, most importantly, make an impact in their communities by reducing the number of trafficking organizations and ideally lowering the number of drug overdoses in their area. So I'm very lucky I get to work out of the Washington-Baltimore HIDA, which is where ODMAP, which we'll talk about today, was developed and is currently housed. So I'm Allie. I'm the ODMAP program manager out of the Washington-Baltimore HIDA. I've been in that role since August of 2021 now already. It's been a year and a half and time has flown. But a little bit about me, I guess, and my journey to getting to ODMAP, because I actually learned about ODMAP before I became the ODMAP program manager. So my background is in public health. I got my undergraduate at Oregon State. So I learned a little bit on the West Coast about public health, which was really focused more on environmental components. And then I got my master's at the University of Pittsburgh. And that was right when opioids and fentanyl were really making an impact on, at that time in my area of interest was Pittsburgh and the Mon Valley and the Ohio areas, all surrounding Western Pennsylvania. It was the hot topic in school because it was what was going on right then. So it was easy to take these principles we were learning and apply it to, unfortunately, what we were seeing, you know, with people being impacted directly in my cohorts, but really learning boots on the ground about what was going on from people that were seeing it, this crisis develop in real time. I got an opportunity through an internship where I was just assigned to work for a group out of the School of Pharmacy that was doing community coalition work. In Pennsylvania, looking at helping communities work on opioid reduction strategies. I fell in love with the state of Pennsylvania, working in communities, and most importantly, opioid overdose reduction work. And then that transitioned into just drug overdose reduction and prevention work. My 2020 thing that I did was I moved to DC and took a job with the CDC Foundation as the public health analyst out of Virginia. And all of this kind of goes into how I've made my way over to the WB HIDA because my public health partner there was the Arlington County Department of Health. And then my public safety was the Washington-Baltimore HIDA. So learning a little bit about ODMAP there, my deputy director, Jeff Beeson, said, hey, we'd love for you to come on and kind of take the program that we've done and keep building it and looking at its impact nationally. And I said, absolutely. This is a product I believe in. It's easy to use. And it's something that people use daily in the field. So that's kind of how I evolved there to be part of this group. And when I joined, it had already been around for about 4 years because ODMAP started in 2016 officially, but it started originating in 2015 and it started out of the Baltimore area with a meeting of the minds of the city of Baltimore saying, we are seeing something happening in our city and we are not working together. So being our position as kind of being an assistance organization, really helping agencies be the best they can be. My director, Tom Carr, said, look, we need a real-time data solution. We can help with that. He turned to my deputy director. He was brand new at the time, 2 weeks in the office. And he said, you have 30 days and minimal funding. We need to make this happen. So ODMAP is interesting because it was developed in a real-time response, and that is our area. We focus on helping agencies track near real-time overdose surveillance systems in their area.
That's awesome. We'll get to know about you. We get to know Haida, and we're going to do a deep dive into ODMAP and MAP in general. Mm-hmm. The concept of mapping disease is not new. It's been around for a long time, mapping for STIs or flu. What inspired that?
They had a program called Case Explorer, which used mapping at the time to look at drug or look at law enforcement deconfliction. So helping officers make sure they understood what was going on so you didn't have blue on blue situation. So you didn't have two officers coming in and interacting with the same subject and risking injury to any of those present. So that was something that was housed out of the Washington Baltimore HIDA. So the infrastructure as far as mapping was there. And I think that that kind of transitioned into, we have this base understanding of mapping. We know that public health uses mapping. I mean, epidemiology was first founded on a map in response to cholera epidemic in London with Jon Snow just mapping X's next to water pumps. So it's an easy transition to say, you know, public health needs to be part of this conversation. If they are so well-versed in mapping as well, and GIS was really on a rise as far as familiarity.
Tell us about what GIS is.
It was a really easy marriage. Oh, geographic information systems.
All right.
So it's the science mapping part of things. So when we say GIS, it is, in my mind, it's the mapping part of our system. So it's how we take latitude and longitude provided to us. We map it, and then that is what is displayed.
So this started just for Baltimore?
Yes. So it started with the Washington Baltimore AOR. So we reached out to our partners.
Wait, you have to tell us what AOR is.
AOR, sorry. All the acronyms. So Area of Responsibility. So the Washington Baltimore HIDA's Area of Responsibility is Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, and counties in West Virginia. So because we had good partnerships with them, we said, let's go ahead and open it up to every agency in those four areas. And we had some on board. And then that was our initial pilot launch. So the first three mapping, or the first three dots on the map, were actually in West Virginia, not in Baltimore. But they were able to get the pilot in that area and expand to where we are today.
All right. So this is a government-funded project, mm-hmm. And the technology ODMAP has expanded from that?
Yes. So we started in our four states, and then 6 years later, we have agencies registered in all 50 states, the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, which is really cool to see on a map. And then we have, from that equates to 4,400 agencies that have signed up to use ODMAP.
Are there countries who want to do this as well, or just the United States?
I've heard from before I joined that there was interest in Europe, I think predominantly the UK. And then we've had our lovely neighbors in the North, Canada, meet with us several times. And it just, those conversations kind of are a little bit different just because of infrastructure. But they love the concept and they understand that the basic framework of what it is essential and could be replicated with our help up there in Canada or potentially in the UK.
All right. So let's understand how it works. So we're tracking mapping overdoses. Let's talk about where the data comes from. How is that connecting, getting into the map?
Sure. So I'll answer this in a couple stages because it's a little complex. So I'll start with the data itself. So what makes OD map unique is that we want to make sure we're focusing on near real time. We know that there are so many good syndromic surveillance. So those are going to be folks like CDC's databases, your ONDCP dashboard, like a lot of other different dashboards out there. They're called syndromic surveillance. So they're going to be the ones that are 6 months to a year behind, but they're going to be vetted one case at a time to verify. We focus on what's going on ideally within the last 24 hours, because in our minds, we want agencies to report on data that they see as an overdose as quickly as possible. So that way they can go and say, you know, on the north side of the city, I'm seeing a lot of activity. I need more naloxone up there. And they can go send people up there to give naloxone out. So because of that data definition, we really want to focus on what is the data that people can share, because we have to worry about HIPAA and privacy. We don't want people going out and trying to figure out who's overdosed. We want to protect that individual. But we want to make sure it's still meaningful. And so we only require 4 specific data points for an agency to submit data. That's going to be the date and time of the incident, the location information, the outcome. So it was a fatal or non-fatal overdose. And then was it what type of naloxone administration occurred? And that's bucketed into single dose, multi-dose, not known, or not administered. And those 4 data points give you a lot of information. Because if you think about it, the location, that gives you a pinpoint on a map, but it also gives you the county, the state, some other things you can query from, zip code. So we really focused on those 4, but we do provide additional data features or data points that people can add. The one we really encourage is suspected drug, because we know that can drive how you respond to a different overdose clusters. Because if you have a rise in fentanyl, you want to know about that. It's extremely dangerous, but also you want to make sure you have naloxone out there. Versus a rise in methamphetamine, methamphetamine doesn't respond to naloxone, but it's still a rise in an increase in overdoses. So we need to think through those types of things with that information. So we partner with a couple different other agencies to figure out what worked as far as additional data features, and those are listed on the site, but those are going to be optional. That's kind of the construct of what can be submitted. How it's submitted is that we want to make sure in our minds when we're partnering with our agencies, we don't want them to have to feel like it is a chore to enter information. We want them to realize it's quick information, but it's information that's meaningful. And so we have 3 different ways that you can enter information into ODMAP. You have our manual entry form that's available in a mobile-friendly way. So you can use it on your phone, your tablet, your squad car, the little computer in your squad cars, or your computer in the office. You also have our OD form, which is the manual entry form, which is connected to our program Case Explorer. But that's for if you have Case Explorer, then you know about it. But otherwise, you don't really need to worry about it. You can use that manual entry form. Or I think the most convenient way, if it's a good fit for your agency, is the API, which for California specifically was a big win, because you can bring on these large
agencies. And tell us what API means too.
Application Programming Interface. And so what that means is that an agency's current record management system, so like Epic or for EMS, it might just be, you know, their run sheet system they're used to. They set up what they define as an overdose. You know, they're entering their information after a call. They hit submit. That information that they've set up is sent directly to us through the interwebs, and then it populates into ODMAP.
So that's API important. To me means no extra clicking for the person who's working, whether it's the officer or the paramedics.
Yes, API means no extra work. It's all about ease. It's all about, and it's instant. There is no delay. As long as it's set up and there's no errors, you keep doing your job exactly how you're doing it, and that information is pushed over. That's exactly it.
Putting in this data, you mentioned law enforcement officers, or is it medical examiners? Is it hospitals? Where is data coming from?
So right now, the majority of our data comes from EMS providers. And that's just because we work with, at this point, we have 21 statewide agencies that submit data to ODMAP through an API. Of those, 19 of them are EMS data. So when you have states like Florida, Georgia, and California submitting all EMS response EMS overdoses to ODMAP, that's a lot of information. So we have that primarily that is coming from EMS. But we also have medical examiners and coroners. We have local departments of health. We have law enforcement agencies, fire and rescue in some areas is the best point of contact. So as long as they're an eligible agency, which ODMAP's not meant for the general public, and I'll explain that here in a second, you can enter information. So as long as it's your information enter, you can enter it. And I just mentioned we do have a rule about eligibility, and that's because we want to make sure that the people accessing this information fall within a certain criteria. So for us, that's going to be agencies that are federal, state, local, or tribal public safety or public health entities working within the overdose reduction, response, and prevention space. So again, things like your hospitals, your EMS providers, your fire departments, your behavioral health departments, your local health departments, your state health departments, your Indian Service Board, your Indian Health Board. Like, there, it's a wide variety, and that's because we know each community is a little bit different. But we want to make sure that they're all within that space.
I can't go to ODMAP like I did for COVID and watch, you know, people overdosing in different places.
Yeah, that's correct. It's not available to the individual in the general public.
So the data is put in, and what do you do with that data? But how expensive is this?
So ODMAP's free, which is great for our agencies. It's free to join. The only cost that might ever be associated with it is if you're setting up an API, you're the person who owns your system, like your record management system, like might charge you for it, but that is dependent. Otherwise, we don't charge anything because we know we want agencies to work with us, and we know that that could be a cost hindrance is if we did have a fee associated with it.
Has there been resistance because HIDTA is known as law enforcement, although we're seeing increasingly partnerships between law enforcement and public health. But as far as public health not wanting to work with law enforcement because of patient protection?
So we get that question all the time, how does all of that work? I think we've reached a point in the epidemic, though, that everyone realizes that we need to come together. And so there is that need to bridge partnerships. And that's one of the fundamental principles of not only the HIDTA, but of ODMAP. We focus on real-time surveillance, but that also means real-time response, which is a coordinated effort. And so when we have public health agencies asking about how law enforcement are using it, we remind them, here is how you can use ODMAP. Here are these things, the do's and don'ts, how data can and cannot be shared. So it's not meant for the general public, but you can have a conversation about it with your law enforcement partners locally to make sure that you're driving those real-time decisions to make change. So we do get that question quite a bit, but we just remind them, you know, they're asking the same questions. Well, we're entering data. What is public health doing with it? And so then we just kind of bring everyone together and remind them that we're all here to use this tool as it's meant to be. And sometimes that actually brings people together into a conversation and sparks ideas. And so we just try to remind them that all the rules apply to everyone, and that they're, you know, both sides are asking those questions.
Yeah. I want to promote, and is such a fan of ODMAP. I chair Credo in San Diego, Community Response to Drug Overdose, and we work to bring together public health, public safety for the goal of prevention. And when people together and work together, you save lives.
Absolutely. We've been in meetings together for San Diego specifically, and it was everyone in the room coming together to figure out how to make this work. So greatly appreciate your leadership in that and helping bring everyone together to understand essentially that it is a tool and why we're all there. We'd all ideally don't want to have these meetings because we've made that much change, but we have to bring everyone together at the moment.
Absolutely. And of course, I like the analogy of we do this for infectious diseases. How come we're not doing it for overdoses, which is also a public health problem? So I think it follows that principle as well. So we got the data. And now, who is the data? Who, you said you mentioned different agencies, but in, you know, clinical sense, is the data used to, okay, now we're going to give more naloxone to this area, town, or get more treatment here? How is that data used? Here's a hot spot. Okay. There's some drug dealer here. Yeah. Does law enforcement use it also to curb the supply?
Mm-hmm. So you just asked quite a complex part question. So I'm going to try to break it out. So how people use the data is, but I always want to know how people are using data too. So it's really key. If I'm going to invest in a tool, I need to know like how it can be used. It's not just collecting data to sit there. So when we think of data, we have, you know, all of these different agencies on board. What are they doing with it? So we have a kind of an idea of ways people are using it. So I'll break that down a little bit. So, one way that like public health are using it, I think is really essential, is they're looking at it from hotspots and trends. So saying, you know, are these areas that we know about, these high consumption areas where we've seen historical hotspots and overdoses, are those changing? That way I can go out and say, you know, where can I put a new naloxone vending machines are a hot topic. Yeah. Where do we want to put one of those in our community? Where do I want to station a peer to make sure, you know, if there is fentanyl test strips, I can make sure that that's the right place we need to go and, you know, advertise about it and make sure people have access to that. Or is it with an area where maybe there is a homeless encampment? So we need to provide additional services or connect with those partners. So I think that that's the way that they look at it. But they also look at the data from a, is there a growing number in a certain time period? So spike alerts. So our system has a feature where you can be alerted if within a rolling 24-hour period, a county meets or exceeds a certain number, and then you're notified. So from a public health perspective, that instant response is really key. So getting an email 3 a.m. saying, hey, we have a spike in our area. Well, if that's my job to respond to that, I'm going to wake up and make sure that I can get out there and find out what's going on. So that's something that people use a lot within public health spaces. How do we respond to spikes? And how do we make sure that all the resources we need are in the right places? Or is something changing so we can address that and find out what's going on? With the spike alerts as well, one thing public health and law enforcement and public safety have come together with that we've seen is my favorite example is actually one when I was a public health analyst in Virginia. I love to tell because my drug intelligence officer partner, Ed Bain, and I were notified of a spike just randomly on, I think it was like a Thursday afternoon. It was almost the weekend. So, you know, you kind of coast in and we got an email saying, no, there's a spike in Arlington County. And we're like, okay. So for reference, Arlington County is only 26 square miles. We are on the west side of DC, just in Virginia, very small community. So when we see a spike, you know, it's a small number, but anything over 3 or 4 in a day is a huge deal for us. So Ed being somebody who worked for Arlington PD for 20 years, like his son's still there, very ingrained in the system, calls up his, you know, his buddies and is asking about, what are you guys seeing? Is this regional? Is this just in Alexandria or just in Arlington? Do we need to reach out to DC? Like asking all these questions. And we were able to find out a lot from their side. And my job was to reach out to our regional health partners and say, what do you see? Are you seeing the same thing? Can we release information? What resources should we get out to the community? And what we decided was Facebook was going to be the best way to get out there. So we looked at the community coalition and they drafted a Facebook post saying there's a spike in our region. It's some deadly fentanyl that's coming through. They didn't know exactly how it was, if it was in like, being pressed into pills or anything like that. They didn't know the route, but they knew it was fentanyl. And then we found out that it was regional. It wasn't just our area. It had already made its way up and down through Northern Virginia. And so we put that up on Facebook. They had 400 times more foot traffic on that post about where to get naloxone, our good Samaritan law, they ran out at the local health department here. They ran out of naloxone and had to tell people where to go next door for the pharmacies. And I think that that just shows that, you know, thinking outside the box in real time can really make an impact. And it was led because Ed and I got a text message saying, hey, there's a large number of overdoses in your area. But it led to something that's become, if there is a spike, that sort of information is shared. And something we've shared with our partners across the country is a great way to get that information out there. And it was free. You just put it up on Facebook.
Awesome. All right. Data to action, as CDC likes to call it. What is a spike?
So for us, spikes are driven by your understanding of the county. So for us, they're county level for right now. We have some plans to do a new feature where it'd be more everyone's county is, or everyone's area of interest is unique. So maybe it's a multi-county area. So you would be able to pick multiple counties. But for right now, it's at a county level. And we have a formula where we make a recommendation on what a spike level might be. And that looks at the last 90 days worth of data, averages it out per day. And then if it meets or if it's above two standard deviations, just to throw it back to stats, if it's above two standard deviations, that would be your recommended threshold. And so it changes over time. So better data in means a more informed spike recommendation. But in our system, when you set up a spike alert, you can choose whichever number you'd like. So that's essential because if you are setting up a strategy where maybe our recommended threshold is 10, do you want to wait until you get 10 in a rolling 24-hour period? Or do you want to be notified when you have 8 so that way you can get out there and make sure that you're getting that information, naloxone, different resources ahead of time so you don't reach that spike? But for us, a spike is just a higher than usual number of overdoses in a county within a rolling 24-hour period.
Yeah, interesting. Is there ways to capture new trends?
I think you could use ODMAP to do that. It would require making sure that you include information on suspected drug. And I think that that's one area where we want to help agencies improve on. And that's because of who we work with, like EMS, they might not be as comfortable saying, you know, if somebody responds to naloxone because they have an opioid, so they show a positive response, they might not know what that person consumed though. So they don't necessarily feel as comfortable claiming, oh, it was fentanyl versus heroin versus an oxy. They might not be as comfortable doing that versus our law enforcement says, there's paraphernalia here. We know it was fentanyl. You know, person has a history documented by family. So we're going to put that here. So when you think of new trends, if they're able to put it in there, like CBD, they could then start to see that information change over time. So they could go and do it.
You're right. I'll have people that come in all the time and it'll be naloxone wake up and they're not waking up. We're giving more naloxone and what's going on. And then I do the drug test. It's like, well, there was no fentanyl here. This is just methamphetamine and Xanax and, you know, marijuana. This is not, this was not a fentanyl overdose. So it's impossible to be accurate without testing, either testing the drug or testing the patient. And testing the patient takes too long. So actually, law enforcement's probably right. And I think I always say that law enforcement makes me a better doctor because they give me data and information that otherwise I would never have. And we are doing a lot more drug testing in real time with mass spectrometers out there with law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I could see a time where ODMAP can let's say these CBD gummies had fentanyl in it, and you know, because of testing that's happening real time.
And we've had conversations about, is there a way to take the in the field testing? So they'll swipe and then they'll test in real time. Is there a way to tag all of that information together? So that way, if there is a batch coming through that is 85% fentanyl and everyone else has 20, we can get that information out there. Or if you're starting to see fentanyl laced gummies, or what was it?
The Adderall pills,
yep, that were mostly fentanyl. So for these area, to make sure that maybe these populations that aren't aware that they're being exposed to new drugs, for whatever reason, that you can go out and make sure you're responding to them quickly. So I think that that'd be an interesting project to do.
For those agencies that have a mass spec in the field, you would do an API, no clicking, no extra work, where that data would go straight to ODMAP and then you could see drug trends.
And I think that'd really, be really cool.
That is so cool.
That would be very cool. That's very
cool. So that's kind of innovations. Are there any other areas? I always like to learn about other communities, other states that are doing some innovations, and you got a pulse on that. What are some things that communities are doing to save lives using ODMAP?
So I think I can say from our end, one thing that's going to come up is we, and if it's, you know, an ODMAP innovation question later, I can always provide another example of how folks are using it, but we're partnering currently on a naloxone layer pilot that's going to come out this year. So we're partnering with several states to track naloxone saturation levels as it relates to ODMAP. And so naloxone saturation is understanding if counties at this point have enough naloxone available to basically meet the need of what's going on related to their drug use trends. So that's one thing so that way they're more prepared. So if they see a spike in their area and then they don't have enough, is there a way to help get them to have enough to make sure if there's another spike that comes through, they don't run out? And this is interesting because this goes back to, there was a summer, I think like 2017, Philadelphia kept running out of naloxone. The poor EMS were just like, we don't have any. And we're just, weekend after weekend kept running out, which is just, it's crazy to think about, but it was just, it was still a stigma about naloxone and the need was just so much. They just kept running out. And this is an area that had a huge increase in overdoses and fentanyl. Wait, what
do
you mean?
I don't think naloxone has stigma. Does naloxone have stigma?
I think for a while, at least for, so this wasn't when I was working in Pennsylvania, we ran into people who were having stigma towards like me going and getting it, because then it meant I knew somebody who was using.
Exactly. Right. So insurance caused that, right? Because if you're getting naloxone.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that's definitely changed now. I think everyone is, I mean, I was in St. Louis a couple months ago and I was talking to my Uber driver and was like, yeah, here's my Narcan kit I keep in my glove compartment because you never know. And we just had a conversation about her experience and how she had a friend. And ever since that she had to use it on the friend, she's like, that's somebody else's friend I might be saving. So now I carry that. And if I ever have to use it, I know where to get another one. And so it's like those types of things that keep me like motivated to find these unique ways people are using it. So back to your question about how people are using ODMAP, it kind of just varies. So we've heard people, obviously the spike alert notifications that I mentioned, so for Florida, we heard about how folks are getting the information out about spikes using traffic signs. So when you're driving down the interstate and there are those like notifying you that there's a crash, the inevitable crash, those like on the road, on the side of the road, they'll say there's a spike going on and like to call this number. And so that's where they put that information out, is through ODMAP. Yeah. And then you've got, so when I think about like methamphetamine versus opioids, I think more on like the programmatic perspective of if I have a predominantly methamphetamine is the primary drug of choice in my area, I don't necessarily know that I would do like a naloxone outreach campaign. I would do more of a drug awareness and methamphetamine awareness. Like I think about it from like that public health programmatic perspective, mostly just due to my background. So I'm not entirely sure how to answer your question per se on if there is anything that people are doing differently.
Yeah. You had some other innovation stories to share.
Yeah. So I think one that is kind of really key to talk about, because we've talked about how there is limited eligibility for agencies. So whenever I do demonstrations, I always hear, what about harm reduction initiatives? By definition, most of them are going to be your nonprofits. So they're not eligible agencies. But we heard about what was kind of going on in Montana, and I'm obsessed with their approach. I think it is the coolest thing that they could have done, because for Montana, a lot of their areas work with nonprofits. And because it's such a spread out area, I mean, it's a vast state. You might have your harm reduction initiative be the best point of contact in that county because it could be, a 3-hour drive for somebody to get any other sort of resource. But if you have a local harm reduction initiative, they need to know what's going on so they can be prepared because they're the local point of contact. So the State Department of Public Health worked on reading with us and asked us all these questions about how this would work. And they decided to, as the data contributing agency, to create a form, basically. So anyone in Montana that would be interested in joining ODMAP, but is part of an agency that maybe is a nonprofit or not eligible, can submit why they should get access to ODMAP. And they just submit that information to the Department of Public Health, who vets it and says, yeah, we're willing to take on responsibility for you as a user. Here are the consequences if you break that. Like we find out that you're going up to the reporters and sharing maps of what's going on, which is a blatant violation of public of our policies and procedures, then they'll revoke your access. And they take that on to monitor that. But they really were trying to meet that need of what did ODMAP say we can do as far as bringing on users to our account and also making sure we're meeting the need of partners in our state that are essential. And so that form right there, they've got a couple new individuals that have signed up. But I think that that's kind of the innovation there of it might not be data to action per se just yet, but it's helping agencies get the data to enact action by making sure it's available and kind of thinking outside the box. They've had some really good success.
That really makes a lot of sense because right? Where the overdose clusters happen are probably the greatest concentration of people who need harm reduction services.
Exactly.
And getting that to them in real time is important. And also more groups are getting those mass specs and testing drugs. So mm-hmm. connecting that will also get you drug trends. So Alex Darmus, our drug intelligence officer in San Diego and Imperial HIDA, does a lot to bring ODMAP in our area and all of the things that are involved in the partnership between public health, public safety. Question is there an effort for national implementation of ODMAP? You're now in how many states?
So we have 30 states with a statewide implementation strategy of some kind. I would love to have national ODMAP implementation. I think when it comes to data, national standardized data from a public health perspective is amazing, but it is so slow. And it is really hard to say, oh, it was 6 months ago, this is what our drug trends look like. When everyone just read in the paper last week, oh, well, we have
the CBD gummies. We did it. We get it. COVID, every week. Mm-hmm. So we know we can do it. How come we're not using it?
I am not sure. I think that that would be a question for people well above my pay grade about why that can't be released. And so it might do with stigma. I'm not sure what's going on with that, to be honest.
But it's the ability to do it. The technology is there, right? It's a matter of the will. Do we want as a nation and treat substance use disorder like do for infectious disease with the same effort and resolve as we did for COVID, we apply it to overdoses. And part of that, the first thing we did with COVID is mapping. Wouldn't we want to do that with this?
Yeah, I think that
I know you do.
I know. And that's where it's a hard balance of I see the benefits and so much benefit to it. And then I sit in conversations and I'm like, but if you just said yes, like this would open up so many opportunities and even just kind of the, at 30 states having some sort of statewide strategy and receiving real-time information from almost half the country. Like if I pull up ODMAP, I can understand a better understanding of what's going on in the last 24 hours, as well as every single ODMAP user can see the same, then most people can see for a lot of things. And so it's really hard to know that there's always going to be different factors, whether it be stigma, politics, things that are always involved. I don't know why this is any different. And when you can just quickly just hopefully make that change. And then we'd get a better understanding. We could come and say, and it impacts so many other things. It's not just law enforcement impacts. It impacts hospitals. It impacts everything. Colleges these days.
I don't see the difference with COVID, right? We did it for COVID. It was amazing how infectious disease could be politicized, but it was, but we still made it happen as far as mapping, which should not. So I'd like to see that happen, but I won't push it. It is above your pay grade. So I get to dream and push ideas. And I think there's a lot I've noticed just with the things I've implemented, there's always got to be first person to do something, a few states, and then there's a bandwagon of fentanyl. How come everyone's doing that? So I'm seeing that with fentanyl testing. A bill that was carried by Senator Melendez, Tyler's Law, and now all hospitals in California, if they do a drug screen, it does include fentanyl. Now, Maryland is following the same, and I could see more states. This is possible. The sky's not going to fall when you do it. It's not going to break the bank. And I hope the same thing kind of happens with OD map. And so Alex's question is, how are we doing in California? Number one, our state EMS agency has been helpful in thinking out of the box. So I'm very proud of our state EMS agents and their resolve to recognizing that this is an important tool and saying, yeah, we want it done. And there's legislation now in California. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I think it's SB 67, Senator Representative Sayarto submitted and should be along the process. I've not heard that it's been tabled, which is always good news to hear that something is still in process. So California, I think, is one of the great examples of how just a couple people in the right place can make drastic change. So you guys, when I came on, there had been a multi-year, especially in San Diego, a multi-year grassroots effort to make OD map local, but also think large. Like Dr. Love, some of our first conversations were you were saying, I have such great vision for this. It's going to be statewide. Like we're going to think local, but it's going to be statewide. Just hang tight. And when I first
met you, bottom up and but also work top down.
Yes. But I had some doubts because I was like, you know what? I don't know California. I've seen it kind of falter, but I got to have faith. She knows the community better than I do. So after so many meetings, just constant, like trying to figure it out, a lot of just politics back and forth, I think we had some movement. We were getting some good ground. Everyone was kind of on board. In these local spots, people were just kind of coming up on onto ODMAP. And then all of a sudden I get a phone call one day and it's somebody at the California EMS Authority saying, we want an API. We're just going to sign up. And I said, I'm sorry, what? We've been talking about this for 2 years. Who are you? kind of situation. And it turned into, I think, 2.5 weeks. And by the time I could tell everyone, they had already noticed that the API was up and running because it just happened so fast. And it was because there was enough pressure on the ground to make change. But then also a person who was just like, this information needs to get out there. I'm going to give what I can give, which is going to be the basics, and we'll make it better. But like, we need to get this information out. And within 2 weeks, it was up and running. And I love telling that story because it just shows that that initiative meant so much. And you worked bottom up, but you worked top down and together trying to figure out, we're all in this together. How does this work? And then supplementing that with legislation to make sure that that doesn't go away. Because unfortunately, we know with programs, things change. And so codifying it through hopefully SB 67 and its process ensures that not only is it there, but hopefully expands it to include some other agencies. So it's a more robust data set to better understanding what's going on. So that's why California is a great kind of example that I love to share whenever we go out, because we hear from all these states like, oh, we can't do it. We're a small state. I'm like, California did it. And let me show you all these other small states too that have also done it and followed suit, like Montana, Idaho, Kansas. They all came on board really fast because they were like, this information needs to be put into the hands of people to help make that change. So they get that information out there and then they start to see the change. So it's really cool to kind of see how all these dominoes just kind of come into play and one state falls in line. And like you said, I think hopefully we'll get the domino effect where just get that one and then it all goes downhill. And then you have the people who are, feel left out because they're like, we're the one that's not doing it.
Right.
I hope we don't have that, but.
We're very liberal state. So as far as patient privacy and protections, that is big in the state. And so if this state could do it, then, you know, others can do it too. And we have every type of communities. We have the big cities, we have rural areas, coroners, medical examiners, hospital. We have everything here. And if it could work here, really, it can be implemented anywhere.
Absolutely.
So a lot of work, and you have been instrumental and, really an energizer bunny being there, saying, all right, we're not giving up. And lo and behold. So Alex, to answer your question, is there an effort for national implementation? I don't know if there's a focused effort or a bill, but I do think that the bandwagon and the more that OD map and Washington, Baltimore, Hyde, I say it's like, okay, we got 30 states. Why don't we have all this? You know, you can continue pushing that. There are always stragglers, and you could, I don't know if there'll be federal legislation, but I think that there'll be.
And you've got so many national partners that are behind ODMAP. So, I mean, we are funded by ONDCP, so we've got the national backing there. You've got the CDC, putting in, promoting ODMAP's use through that, or through the OD2A, so the overdose data to action grants being highlighted, as well as the CDC Foundation's overdose response strategy, it being one of their key pillars in their efforts, which is how I met Alex and got to work with you guys. And then you've got BJ, the Bureau of Justice Administration. I should know that. They provided grant funding for agencies to implement ODMAP. So there is national backing for it. It's just that coordinated effort you talked about. I don't know if that's centralized yet. It might be a state by state approach until a centralized approach comes into place.
Yeah, you know what? It reminds me of the different agencies that supported the prescription drug monitoring, right? And when you have a problem, when you have a real problem, data doesn't solve the problem, but it directs the solutions. And you can't really talk about specific solutions or in a complete cure or a problem or with that data. So that's when I remember all the list of agencies that you just mentioned were backing prescription drug monitoring systems and coordinating between states so they talk to each other. And I see now the same efforts happening with ODMAP. So,
and I think they're now, I think there's one in every state now. I think the last one came on board last year, the year before. So it's proven to work. If you can get the backing and bring everyone together, it does provide that support network to say, well, we can make it work. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see that follow suit.
That is awesome. Anyway, I'm really proud of you and your efforts and your whole agency and leadership that's are working on ODMAP and so generous. This is for free. So generous with helping other states and agencies, big and small, into making this happen to save lives. And finally, Allie, is there anything else that you have as far as a wish list or share?
Yeah. So I mean, I'd love to see ODMAP continue to grow, obviously, to get that information in the hands of agents that can drive change and make impact. I'd love, by the end of the year to get a couple more states and hopefully see additional legislation. I know that there's the California bill. I know that there's some additional bills in the works. So I'd love to see a little bit more there to show that support for our agencies. Our big thing that we have coming up, we have two kind of big projects in the works. One of them is going to be called custom bookmarks, or we call them circles, or like a Zillow component. So it's where you can go in and draw your own boundary. And this is really key for our areas that don't follow geographical boundaries. So like our tribal communities, they cover multiple states, multiple counties. But how do we make sure we're meeting their needs? So being able to do that. And then ODMAP would work the same. You just get to save that and it would be your area that you look at. So that's one of my big wish lists to get done. The naloxone pilot. Yeah. And then our naloxone pilot. So ONDCP loves ODMAP. They gave us more money and said, we want to see naloxone on it. So seeing that roll out, and I think its impact in the next year, I think is going to be a big game changer, because you see the direct results of overdoses and then this life-saving drug. How do these two play together? Is there a way to make sure that we always have enough? And if it's not, how do we talk to different agencies to get more funding to get enough? Or is it a production component? Like, how does all of this work together? So thinking more about expanding into the naloxone space. So those are kind of my big things. And I know it's only March, but I feel like it's already mapped out the whole year already. So things might change, but those are my big wish lists for right now, is just making sure we keep getting into communities that need it, and then providing additional resources to our agencies so they can continue to make change.
That's great. Thank you, Allie. And shout out to Jeff Beeson, who's been the director, also been so generous and, you know, answering calls and email, going to meetings as well, even in his position. Really, you have great backing. I want to say thank you, Alex, for your question and your work that you do for HIDA and for San Diego. And thank you, Allie, for your interview today, your passion, your energy, focus on mapping, really bring, you know, one state at a time to map and then eradicate the disease overdoses, bringing our communities together.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me and letting me come talk about ODMAP.
Thank you for listening to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answer your questions. This week's episode would not be possible without the generous support from our sponsor. A sincere and warm thank you to FAF, Families Against Fentanyl. Visit familiesagainstfentanyl.org and sign the petition to declare illegal fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. Make drug dealers think twice and three times before peddling killer drugs. Our producer is Dave Rivas from Davey Boy Productions. I am your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. We hope we brought your day a little bit more high truths.